We have now started the recording. All parties, this call is now being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. You may now begin.
Thank you. Could somebody do a roll call for me, please?
Absolutely, Michele. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everyone. On today's call, we have Michele Nylon, Tatiana Kramtsova, Siva Mutsuzami, Sergei Gorbunov, Cheryl Langdonor, Helen Laverty, Ted Suzuki, Paul Diaz, Mike O'Connor, Elaine Doolin, Graham Shinowitz, Tim Ruiz, Ron Wickersham, Mason Cole, James Bladell, Barry Cobb. From Stark, we have Marika Konings and Gisela Gruber-White, myself. We have apologies from James has joined the call. From Alan Greenberg and from Karim Atumani. J. Scott Evans will be joining late, as will Jeff Eckhouse. And we have quite a few people on the call this evening. If I could please ask you all to state your names when speaking. Thank you. Over to you, Michele.
Thank you. In case you haven't gathered, as Alan couldn't make the call this evening, I put my head on the block to chair it in his stead. So if you'll all behave and be nice, I appreciate it. Have you all got a copy of the agenda for today? And if not, it's up on Adobe Connect. So we've had a roll call. Was there any update on the constituency statements?
Yes, this is Marika. Just to note that so far we've received constituency statements or stakeholder group statements from the business constituency, the registry stakeholder group, the ITT, and the registrar stakeholder group. And this is just a question whether any other statements are forthcoming or whether I can go ahead and summarize these and create a table as we did as well for the public comments.
Hello, this is Ron Wickersham.
Hi, Ron.
Yes. Yeah, we're not proceeding good with the NCUC statement, getting that, so probably it's not wise to hold up waiting for that.
Okay. Thank you. That's been noted. So, Marika, could you do your funky thing with that little summary thing you've done, if nobody has any objections?
I will do.
Thank you, Marika.
Barry, you've got a hand up.
Oh, do I? Oh, sorry, Barry Cobb. Beg your pardon. Hi, Barry. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you. This is Barry Cobb. I'd just like to point out for those that do through the BC constituency, when I submitted that, the very last sentence of that statement was an error. I had mistakenly classified this as a pre-PDP when it's not. I corrected that and submitted it. And just to make it clear, the BC did not vote on this position statement because there were no formal recommendations made, and we're reserving that for the outcomes towards the end of this working group. So if you have any questions, you can direct them towards me. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Anything else on the constituency statements? Okay. The registrar survey, I believe staff were looking after that. Is there any update on that?
Yes. This is Marika again. Just an update that I haven't had a chance yet to do any further work on that as I've been out of the office last week. It's more a note here. I don't know if there are any further questions on that following the discussion in Seoul and after people had a chance to maybe review in more detail the outcomes. But I hope to have some further details on that for next week's call.
Okay, thank you. Marika, you sent through some bits of the nominate report. What was this in relation to? This is to do with renewal rates, was it?
This is following a post by Barry Cobb, who had noted that this was spoken about in an article on a news site, in which someone pointed out as well that this is data this group might want to review in the context of their discussion on exploration. And the data that is here is some data in relation to .UK on renewals, and it has some information on renewal rates, reasons for not renewing a domain name, and I guess the question for this group is to review this data and see whether there's any relevance in relation to the discussions the group is having.
Okay. Barry, did you have any further insights into this?
Yeah, I personally, I haven't studied every number of the report myself. I did come across it, and I just thought it would be good for the group, at the very least, just to communicate out to the group that, you know, we're being watched, so to speak, because they definitely, the posting had called out that, you know, there was effort being taken by this group, et cetera.
I'll just give a quick look at us. Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, this data should be useful to the ICANN working group examining the issue of expiring domains.
Cheryl here, Michele.
Yeah, work away.
Thanks. The particular parts that Marika pulled out, where you're looking at the reasons, the research they did as to why people chose to renew or not to renew their domain name, I think that's probably something that we could shamelessly steal and put somewhere in a preamble, because it is a piece of statistically interesting information, and I think particularly the reasons for the non-renewal. When we look at some of the beliefs, that people have about automation and reminders, I think it's not an exact fit with the metrics we're looking at, but I think it's foundation to some of the assumptions we might make based on the metrics we're going to have.
That's a very, very valid point. I think there's also, just as a kind of a side note, I think AFNIC did have some information as well. I'll see if I can dig that out for the group. They've done a few reports on the state of the .fr namespace, which I think probably contains some similar enough data. So based on what we've seen there, just trying to view this.
Remembering, Cheryl here, that of course in the case of UK, Nominate also send out reminders, so you've got a dual response or coming in. And I think we may need to, if we're looking at other studies, which I think would be well worthwhile if they're easy enough to find, we probably need to look at those in two data sets, those where it is only the registrar that has contact and those where it's not the case.
Very true. Very true.
Sorry, there was a statistician moment. I'll go back to being simple again now, Michele.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. Now, I was just looking at the stats here. I mean, you don't see a huge number of people kind of going, "Oh, I didn't renew the domain name because my registrar is a scumbag," or "I didn't renew the domain name because the registrar never told me." They're literally saying, you know, they forgot. I can't read. It's Chinworth.
Yeah, I thought this was actually interesting. This is a point that I was thinking about in Seoul, which is basically you see that 98% recall receiving a reminder about renewal. So to me it seems like part of the question here about the post-expire, I mean, the frame is post-expiry, but I'm not totally convinced based on this data and based on, you know, kind of anecdotal experience with other people that's really where the root of the problem is. I mean, sometimes it seems like people, you know, confusion and concern over the expiration of a domain name, you know, results from, you know, just a failure to act or a failure to be aware of what's going on prior to the expiration, and no one pays attention about it until their website goes down. So it's just an interesting, I mean, it may be out of scope, but to me it's an underlying issue with that probably deserves at least some consideration. Maybe it's already been considered thoroughly and disregarded, but one which I think is a relevant conversation to have.
What you mean, the reminder, reminding people, or them not being aware of the consequences if they don't renew it?
Both, I'd say. Reminding people and how those people get reminders, whether or not, you know, the email they get is effective, and also whether or not they act on them. I mean, some of it is, you know, people just not... People thinking that it's the process that it's the post-expiry process that's broken and confusing, but it's only that way because you freak out because your domain name is down, and that's the, even though you had probably could have gotten or did get previous notice that there was something about to happen, you don't really seem to get concerned about it until your domain name goes down.
Okay.
Cheryl Lee McCurley. I think from the registrant's point of view here, the vital importance when one talks about emails or perhaps other uses, not necessarily just websites that you're making, because of your domain name. It is an important piece of one's business, but it is not exactly up front and central to your day-to-day trying to make ends meet in all cases. If you're running a meat export business, for example, you probably are thinking, even if you have a website, of your website being rather more as a catalogue, and may in fact overlook the fact that your next order or email is going to be compromised as well. So it comes back to something that we've said a number of times before, and that's the need for the registrant to have a better understanding of the full consequences and indeed of the value of what they're licensing. But I also think that we should take a moment when we look at these statistics and any other metrics that we collect from other sources. I'd love to see more information from other sources that Nominet has put together here for the subset of reasons for not renewing a domain name. If you look at those, there's actually a change between 2007 and 2009 in the way that registrants are approaching these assets. And we may need to look at how that's going to change both behaviour and expectations from the registrant point of view. But when you look at what would be project or business not starting and the short-term opportunity numbers there, I would think that previously you'd have expected a much closer set of figures, where right now in 2009 there seems to be a different mindset, or a different set of uses, and therefore a different set of it's no longer use for me that's coming out. So it's one of those perhaps things that we might need to also recommend some longer term longitudinal studies might be interesting, and perhaps collect from a number of the CC operators and some of the global as well.
Just as a point of information as well, bear in mind that the COUK registrations for a two-year period only. You can't register one for 1 year. You can't register for 10 years. Anybody else want to jump in there? No? Helen, go ahead.
Oh, I was just wondering, when I look at the chart, the 2007 bars are a lot less than the 2009 bars. I don't know if that means there were a lot of people that didn't know how to answer the question or what it is, but it makes it very difficult to tell whether it's increased or decreased when the overall results from 2007 seem to be less than 2009.
Well, Any thoughts, anybody? No.
Well, we could. So Cheryl here. We could always ask Nominet whether or not they had a particular outreach in 2007, which meant there was a whole lot of additional registrations that were coming up for renewal in 2009.
So the CLUK namespace is still growing, which, yeah, I mean, so for the 2009 expiries and renewals for domains registered in 2007 or before then. Paul Dios?
Yeah, thanks, Michele. I just want to ask the group in general, you know, this data from Nominet is definitely interesting, but it seems to me it falls more in the need to know for the purposes of this working group. I'm just kind of at a loss. Why would we go back to a CCTLD operator when, you know, the way they run their operations, the rules that they operate are very, very different than the ICANN registry operators? And I'm just really kind of at a loss as to how this informs this particular working group.
Cheryl here. My immediate response to the differences between the way the operations are in the CC and the ICANN registry world is, of course, more's a pity in many cases, because there is perhaps an amount of registrant confusion or registrant misinformation or change of expectations between what the registrants who are using both CCTLD operators and GTLD operators have, and some of the small proportion but significant to those people affected of complaints may in fact come from the differences between what one is expecting with one's regular interactions with your CCTLD world and that they get in the GTLD world. And the other thing is, I think we did start by saying that this is preamble and background information. It's not information that is asking us to turn over the work that we're currently doing or take it in different directions. What it is doing, however, is giving us a very interesting illumination on some of the behaviour and some of the reasons of behaviour on renewal or non-renewal from the registrar strand point of view.
I think I'd kind of echo, I'd agree with Cheryl's take on that to a certain point. I mean, Paul, with all due respect, I mean, Nominet have a lot of data on this. I think some of the other CCTLDs have asked questions of registrants, whereas, sure, the operation of GTLDs may be different, but they haven't actually asked them. Haven't asked as many people. Haven't actually gone out and conducted these surveys.
Can I follow up?
Then Jeff.
Yeah. Thanks, Michele. And I'm sorry if the question sounded. I'm not trying to be argumentative or you know, confrontational in any way. I'm just genuinely asking the question from the sense of, if this is a policy development process, it's expected that the group is ultimately going to come up with either recommendations for policy change, or at a minimum best practices or something. And so I guess I'm asking, if we take what you both said, what both Cheryl and Michele have said, to natural conclusion, then that means we need, as a group, to look into what particular things CCTLD operators are doing differently than the GTLD operators to try and perhaps tease out a best practice or identify things that work better there, cause less confusion, et cetera. Okay, to a point. But I'm still left wondering, and then what's the end result? We're going to go back and tell the ICANN, the GTLD operators, this is what we found, and we recommend you guys do it this way? That was my question. I'm just looking for this is all very interesting, but where does it take us? What will the group get out of this sort of research?
Jeff?
Well, actually, I had a similar question. I'm sorry if I was a little late for the call, but I think, you know, this is interesting information. I won't say let's throw it out. I think it's interesting. You know, I looked through it. I didn't see you know, before even going into, if, you know, statistical information and finding out some of the points on this is, I guess, yeah, what is it, you know, the whole idea is there, you know, I'm looking at the proposed agenda and to look at the notes and say, hey, is there adequate opportunity and whether for registrants about expired names and the two main questions here. I guess to echo what Paul's saying is, this is great, this is useful information, but I don't see how it helps us get to our goals. Maybe it does, and someone can point it out to me, because I'd love to know why we're going over this survey.
Well, from my perspective, and I'll then let Helen jump in, from my perspective, it gives one of the problems that we seem to be coming round and round is a lot of anecdotal he said, she said type stuff relating to this. And from what I'm seeing personally is that a lot of the problems people seem to have with post-expiry is actually to do with the expiry, not what happens after the fact. So, I mean, what I think is interesting looking at the Nominate report is, you know, people actually saying, well, you know, they didn't want to renew the domain names, and most of them remember actually receiving renewal reminders from people. So, you know, that's quite a valid thing. Helen, you want to say something?
Oh, wait, Michele, can I just finish on that point there?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
So just to put that around is to say I'm looking at it, and then we say 98.2% recall receiving reminders about renewal, correct? So do we want to say, okay, if 98% remember, then, you know, then there is adequate. I mean, how do, you know, besides just using it as a data point and saying, hey, on Nominate, to me, it looks like that 98% of the people recall seeing something about a reminder, and that's great, but I don't know, do we say, okay, it looks like that's a large amount, do we take it and put it into the rest of the group, into our information and say 98% of the people with co-UK names know about this? I just really want to, before we spend, you know, a lot of time going over it, I just want to try and figure out how we use this data as effectively as possible, if at all.
Alan?
Well, first of all, we don't have anything like this for the GTLDs. I wouldn't take all of it as accurate reflection of what happens with the GTLDs, but I think it's important that we take advantage of information like this. And from this, it appears that informing people that their domain is expiring is not their worst problem. It seemed a lot of people are still aware of it, and not that many forget. There are some possibilities that we have found in the past that actually making sure that a domain goes down is a good way, because people just keep putting it off and putting it off until their website goes down, and then it's, oh, I guess I better do something. So I think that is definitely part of the problem. And on the other hand, I think it's actually very good to ask the CCLTs what's going on, because they have more flexibility than what ICANN says. They can do different things, and we can look at what different things the different CCLTs are doing. CIRA, for example, for .ca domains, also sends renewal notices to the registrants. Maybe that's something we want to look at. I actually don't agree, but perhaps it is something that people might think would be a good idea if the registry actually did send reminders to the people on the domain. There are different things that we can look at from this information. So barring a more detailed chart like this directly for the GTLDs, I think we should look at this quite seriously.
Cheryl?
Thank you. And Helen, it couldn't support what you're saying more. In fact, I think one of the things Michele and I both mentioned earlier was, wouldn't it be interesting to see if there was different statistics from CCTLDs where there is those where the registry does and those where the registry doesn't contact registrants themselves. That simple piece of information could lead us towards giving some very significantly different outcomes and advice as part of this PDP process.
Silence. chatter on the Adobe Connect. Right. Okay. Okay. Well, so this. Okay, we have some data here, which may or may not be useful. So we'll agree for the moment that it may or may not be useful, and whether we can do anything with it or not is subject to some debate. Okay, then. The question. Oh, Helen's up, hands up again. Hello, Helen. Go ahead.
Sorry, I just wondered, is it worth asking some of the other CCLDs whether they can contribute some similar kind of data so that we have more data to compare and see whether there is consistency across CCLDs? I mean, I could probably ask CIRA whether they've got some information that they would like to contribute, and the other CCLTs may have a reasonable amount of data.
They might do, yeah. Marika?
Yeah, this is Marika. Just note, I'm happy to talk to my colleague who's supporting the CCNSO to see if he has any further data or whether he would be willing to send out a note to the CC community to see if they have any similar kind of data that they're willing to share.
Okay, thank you, Marika. Right. The question, okay, the charter question always is going to be the core question, whether adequate opportunity exists for registrants to redeem their expired domain names. So, where have we left things with that at the moment? Marika, you still have your hand up?
Yeah, just taking that down. Sorry.
Okay. That's fine. Tim?
Well, I guess I'm a little confused on that because of Alan's last note to the list. It sounds as though at least two proposals or suggestions or whatever are coming in that could affect that question, I guess, depending on how the group views those proposals. So I don't know if we're talking about what, just in general, what the group thinks or what the consensus of the comments from both the public and the constituencies said, if we have that analyzed. But I guess I'm not sure where we go with that question right now until we understand what Alan was talking about as far as the proposals he was referring to.
Yeah, so we... Marika, have you seen anything of these proposals he mentioned?
This is Marika. No, I haven't. Apart from Alan mentioning it and indeed the note he sent to the list, I don't know more than that. So I have no idea either whether that's something that will come before the next call or it will take a lot more time. I'm not sure. But just to follow up on Tim's question, the reason why it's up here is basically to continue discussions that we had at an initial stage. I think rather was desire as well to have some more data. Now that we had some initial results from the survey, I think the question is put back here in combination as well with some of the comments that were made to see if there is some more substantial discussion on this issue within the group and whether there's already any kind of consensus around a potential answer. But I agree that any discussion might change in light of whatever proposals are forthcoming.
Okay. So the email from Alan, for those of you who may or not have read it, I mean, he's talking about two initiatives that will be coming soon. One is a complete redesign of the end-of-life process, and the other one is a more modest proposal, but we don't have any real details on that. So kind of flying a bit blind, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So is there any point in us discussing that at the moment if, while we're waiting for these proposals to materialize?
We can't fly blind, sorry, Shirley.
Yeah.
I do note also that the matter of post-expiry has been brought up in a number of people's lists for the RAA work groups to look at. So it may be that there is some overlap that he's aware of.
Okay. Are you referring to Danny's list?
I was referring to Danny's list, yes.
Okay.
We need to make sure that the assumptions aren't that it's being done in the other work group. We actually have to talk to the other work groups to make sure that people aren't letting it drop through the cracks.
Right. Okay.
Michele, what we don't want to A, duplicate effort, and B, we certainly don't want to have a situation where there is different directions being taken by two chartered work groups.
Okay. Are any of you on the RAA working group?
Well, that would be a yes.
Okay, apart from Cheryl, is anybody else involved with us?
Michele, this is Marika. Margie is the staff lead on that group, and I'm also backing that one up. So we'll make sure as well that we coordinate from a staff perspective, that we get those lists and see as well which items or topics are also covered or might be more appropriately covered in any of the ongoing PDPs to make sure that, indeed avoid two different directions or that kind of stuff.
Okay. That would be helpful. Okay, then, look, considering what Alan sent to the list, then maybe it might be better if we looked at the charter question 2 for the moment, which is to do with the registration agreements. Does anybody have any issue with moving on to that?
Nope.
So does anybody have any thoughts on that? Marika has a hand up.
Yes, I can just comment from my experience on doing research, for now on the first or the top four, but having quickly looked through some of the other information, the others probably have similar way that there's great discrepancies in how information is presented and how easy it is to find the relevant provisions. I mean, some contracts are literally over 50 pages long. Some are really written in legal language. Some registrars do provide very clear FAQs or information sheets on the website that detail it. So from the research so far, I can just say that there's great level of difference in how clear and conspicuous information is. And of course, one of the questions, of course, the group needs to look at how do you define what is clear and conspicuous enough? What might be good for one might not be clear enough for another. So just wanted to share that on the basis of the research done so far.
Okay, thank you. Does anybody else have any thoughts or comments? Jeff.
Yeah, actually, that's a good question that I don't know if we've discussed it in the past, that Marika had, what is clear or conspicuous enough and who is the intended person to find out if it is, if it is, because something, I could come in at, I'm not a lawyer, but I could be a lawyer and say, okay, that's clear to me, versus somebody who says, who has no idea about what it is, maybe it's not clear to them. I'm just trying to, what's our standard, if there is one, and is there really, I'm just trying to think, is there a way to really answer this question?
Fair question. anybody have any thoughts? Cheryl, I'll turn to you.
So who was that? Someone was there.
Anybody else want to jump in?
Yeah, this is Barry. I'm sorry, I stepped away from my computer. I'd just like to say maybe a first step in that direction is consistency. You know, to Marika's point, and having reviewed through several registration agreements, I mean, it's certainly all over the board. You know, depending on what those provisions should look like, you know, that's a different story, and, you know, how easily understandable they are by one party versus another. But at the very least, we can start with consistency as a suggestion. Thank you.
Consistency with respect to what exactly?
With the language that's written in the registration agreements themselves. Having done some other research across several different types of registrar agreements, some registrars don't have language or very little language in there about expiration of domains and post-expiration. Others, like Marika has mentioned, you know, they have, you know, they've crossed every T, dotted every I in their language as it relates to post-expiration or expiration of domain names. So, you know, at the very least, there's a high degree of inconsistency across the marketplace. And I think the more that we can promote consistency where feasible and possible, that will help ease in the understanding of the policy itself.
So what you mean, just to clarify, is by consistency you mean covering certain topics within the agreement. Is that what you mean?
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you. Cheryl, then Mikey, then I think it was a long list. Cheryl, go for it.
I won't be long for once. Thank you very much, Cheryl. Here, look, that's exactly what I was typing up. It's a matter of getting a baseline level, a minimum practice, a set of expectations that a registrant can know and understand. In other areas, I won't go into our CC code of practice development here in Australia. I'll bore the other RAA groups on that, not this one. But in the telco world here in Australia, we found, because of the way things had grown, that we ended up having to develop a plain language policy and a set of guidelines for industry, which goes right down to the size of the typeface and exactly how information is to be presented to the, in this case, consumer, but we can replace that word with the word registrant, in any form of purchase and contractual agreement between the registrant in this case and the licensee of the licensor of the domain name. It's all about predictability, ease of use, knowledge, expectations being met.
Okay. Mikey?
This is Mikey. I wholeheartedly agree with Cheryl's comments, and then I'm going to tackle the other word in this, which is the conspicuous word. And it seems to me that there are some fairly simple metrics that we could apply. For example, we could say, how many clicks does it take from the homepage of a registrar to get to the clearly worded stuff? 1, 2, 3, 5, 10. You know, most of the information that registrants are going to be collecting is going to be over the web, and it seems to me fairly easy to put a metric or two around that.
Okay. Graham?
Yeah, I guess, Gray, this is Gray Chinoweth. In this, I posted this to the chat. To me, the important point is a distinction between required process and required disclosure or clarity of what you do. And I think that I'd be cautious about getting into, you know, website design for registrars or, you know, figuring out how large the typeface is in any document that you have to produce. because those things are just difficult to enforce. And, you know, that I think what we're after here is, and I heard someone actually make a suggestion about this. I forget what meeting it was, but I don't know. In the U.S., we have a description on the back on the side of every piece of food carton, which has some basic information and disclosure about what the information is with related to that particular food product. And I really like that analogy here, so that you have a quick, easy form of where to get the information about how things work, without getting in too far into the details of, you know, prescribing a practice. And then the second thing that I'd note is that I'll leave it at that for the moment.
Okay, thank you. Alan?
Yes, I was not quite certain from what Cheryl was saying, but is there an implication that maybe there should be some consistent language that all registrars put on their sites that explain about how the expiration process works? And if so, most of the documentation that ICANN puts out would have to necessarily require a lot of legal input on it, and therefore it would be not something that most registrants would ever want to plow through, and I would say most of them wouldn't understand it. So, yeah, getting back to what Mikey said about the clear language or something that you can put on a milk carton, maybe there should be something clear, but having a consistent document that's prescribed by somebody like ICANN would probably not be of any benefit other than for legal requirements.
Tim?
Tim, I think Tim? You're muted.
Yeah, yep. Sorry about that. I was muted.
But it was good, though.
I guess that what I was going to bring up was pretty much been covered, just that. But, you know, just a question about what different group members meant as far as consistency goes, but I think that's been clarified, not necessarily consistency of practice as much as consistency of transparency or making that information available. So I just wanted to clarify what was intended there, but I think it's pretty much been answered for me.
Okay. Graham?
Yeah, the second point I was going to bring up was as a lawyer, I guess my comment would be that it's difficult to – lawyers are going to want to write things in a very specific way, and I think that has its place. And so I don't know if it's necessarily fruitful to talk about trying to force a contract language to be in plain language, because that – I think that's – it's just that those are two difficult things to meet. I think what we're really talking about is making sure that the contractual language, the essence of the contractual language gets pulled out and boil down into a little bit more accessible form and isn't locked away in some contract, but rather is kind of, is more to the front so that people can access it quickly. But I think it's useful to not try and change the contract, but rather try and get it out of the contract into something that can be, that's designed to be more usable than the typical, contract language.
Marika?
Yeah, this is Marika. I just wanted to echo what Graham was saying, because in doing some of the research, and you go through the contracts, which sometimes very tedious, and especially not being a lawyer, it required as well some kind of interpretation or trying to read in what certain sentences might mean, because lawyer language was like may or may not. But some registrars provided them very clear FAQs in which really was in where it would be spelled out, like this is what happens on day one, this is what happens on day five, which I think from a registrant's point of view makes a lot clearer. And I do understand as well why you need certain language in a contract from a legal perspective. But on the other side, indeed from the registrant's perspective, in documents like FAQs would be very helpful. And there another note might be, and you know, I have no idea how something like that could work in practice, where you could have like a central place or maybe a requirement where registrars provide a link to that information that's also easy accessible, because, you know, for some, as some registrars, of course, provide a lot of different services, it's not always easy, or, you know, with one click, you're not able to find that information, and it requires some digging. So I was wondering as well, as part of this discussion, if there could be consideration of trying to find some kind of way to have that information centralized, where people can say, well, here you find all the links to all the exploration-related provisions or practices of the different accredited registrars. But just something to, you know, put on the table.
Mikey?
This is Mikey. I like Tim's use of the word transparency, because I think gives us something to hang some of our recommendations. It sounds like we're pretty agreed that we would like to have some clear language that's extracted from undoubtedly more complicated contracts available easily to registrants, both on the registrar's site, preferably not too many clicks from the top, and perhaps also in a repository where they're all collected. And what I'm sort of reminded of is some recent documentation that came to the RAP working group, where the respective practices of several registrars are sort of laid out side by side, and it was very helpful to be able to see in very plain language and very short form the differences between the practices without having to wade through the multi-page contracts to do it. So it sounds like we're headed in a pretty positive direction here.
Tim?
Yes. I'm going to put my hand down here first so I don't forget. A couple things. You know, in regards to conspicuous, one of the problems that I know registrars get concerned with is because it, you know, this conspicuous notice comes up, you know, now a number of different times in different PDPs or whatever that we talked about, or in discussions about the RAA. So we get concerned about, you know, how. And when we start having all these things that need to be conspicuous, then pretty soon nothing is conspicuous again. So just one suggestion might be that, you know, we're working on this registrant rights and responsibilities charter, I believe is what we're calling it, that,
yep,
you know, will be maintained on ICANN's site and registrars will be required to link to. Perhaps, you know, that there could be a complementary document or charter or whatever you want to call it that registrars would maintain that might apply to things that are unique to the registrar, but yet we want to have some consistency in that the topic or the aspect of the registration that's covered is easily accessible or conspicuous, and so that, you know, there could be this one repository or one document where those things are then placed. So, because the Registrant Rights and Responsibilities try to maintain that ICANN isn't going to cover all of this, because there are differences in business models and the way registrars approach things. So how can we be consistent in making sure that those differences are clear and conspicuous or transparent? And so that might be a way of looking at that, to try to have this complementary relationship between that charter and what and something that the registrars might became maintain on their site, instead of looking at these in this kind of one-off fashion as to what we want to have clear and conspicuous, that we would just have this a single repository for those kinds of things. Just throw that out as a suggestion, something we might be able to refine and make work.
Sure, thank you, Tim. Cheryl?
Hi, Cheryl here. I just wrote a tome into the chat. Sorry about that, but it cupped across a number of things that were being said, and goes back to some of the telco industry examples that we've successfully worked through in the last 6 or 8 years here in Australia. And the end point of much of what we've done and seem to make our consumers relatively happy with, as well as our industry look good, is echoing some of what has been said, so I've just put it in the chat for reference.
Could you post that for list as well, please, Cheryl, when you get a chance?
Oh, God, you mean I've got to cut and paste. Okay.
It's pretty hard to... It's, I don't know about other people, but I'm finding it very hard to cipher things shoved into the chat. And then as soon as somebody says something else, it disappears off the page, so it's probably easier to read from an email.
Oh, we should all be on Google Wave.
Ooh, I love Google Wave.
Hey, I got 30 more invitations. Just ping me if you want me to invite you.
I wish somebody would invite me, because I've got to set up on the wrong account.
Well, Michele, just send me your account you want it set up on, and I'll fix it.
Here, I'll put it in the chat for you.
Thank you.
I will thank you. And James, he's looking for one as well. Gmail.
Just put the emails in there, boys, and I'll get you done.
But look at this.
Look at this. Okay. Cheryl, you're just getting all the folks there.
Well, we... Hey, I've only got 30. Just remember, I've only got 30 more.
You need to give your Google account, not your private one as well. Let's go to
I can guarantee you, if you've got a Gmail account, it's going to be far more seamless, and a lot of the bells and whistles that they're developing work very, very nicely with a Gmail account. They will be
anyway,
out as well.
Moving back to post-expiry. Come on, focus. I am all people.
Jesus, he's tough.
Yeah, he is tough, especially when we've got a shiny new toy to play with. Dang.
Exactly.
Oh, help. I can see it now.
You're losing it. Michaela, you're losing us. You better rein us in.
Yeah.
I was on my best behavior. I was on my best behavior, but I'm losing it now. Okay. Right. So the question was whether expiration-related provisions of typical registration agreements are clear and conspicuous enough. And I would tend to agree with Tim that since everybody wants everything to be conspicuous, how that's going to work is beyond. Oh, I love Tim's address. Okay. There's a lot of stuff coming through which requires us as registrars to provide all sorts of wonderful bits of information, but suspiciously and transparently, but how anybody's going to be able to deal with all that is beyond me. That's just my own personal take. I also pasted into the chat a link to to Plain English website.
Yeah, that's good.
Of course, the other thing, which I'm just being naughty, but I might as well throw it in there, is that if I can't expect the registrars to adopt plain English, could I can adopt plain English as well, please?
Oh, you're no fun at all.
I'm sorry.
Cheryl here, in all seriousness, though, that is exactly what the Public Participation Committee is saying needs to be done and is working towards. So I don't see that it's unreasonable. I think it should be a high-level expectation and something that should be batted back to them.
Oh, totally, totally. Well, they can't expect the contracted parties to use plain English if they're not going to use it themselves.
Exactly right.
Yeah. Or plain Chinese, or plain whatever.
Or plain, exactly. Is this meeting, is this call a 60 or a 90 minute?
It could be a 60.
This is Marika. It definitely could be 60, and I definitely wouldn't mind that. But we often tend to go for 90 minutes. But there's nothing restricting you from keeping it shorter.
I think, look, since everybody now is distracted by the shiny object that Cheryl has thrown in there, and based on the fact that we're waiting for the document/proposal/ God knows what, which is coming from Alan. I don't think we're going to achieve much more by continuing this call this evening. So unless anybody has any major problems with this, can we call this an evening or a day or a morning, depending on your time zone?
This is Marika. Can we then just confirm that the next meeting is next Tuesday, same time, same place?
Anybody have any issues with that?
My only issue next Tuesday? Yeah, no, that's fine. Just trying to remember where I was in the world. All right.
Will Alan be... There's nothing going on next week that will affect Alan's ability to...
He only indicated this one, I thought.
Oh, okay.
Yes,
okay.
Correct. That's what I thought as well. But I'll double check.
You're trying to get rid of me already.
Yeah, we don't like you, Mickley.
Thanks. Duly noted, and I shall remember that for the next conference call that I'm chairing. Thank you.
No,
thankful.
I'm in big trouble now.
Okay, then, boys and girls, then in that case, can we officially finish this call, and we'll all talk again next week.
Thanks.
Thanks. Great job. Thank you. Thanks, McKinley.
Thank you.
Speak next week.
And thanks to Cheryl for all the
Google Wave invites. No,
thanks, Cheryl.
Right, I'm out of here.
Take care, McKinley. See you next week.